Welcome to the spectacular season 2 of the award-winning Table Read. Today's episode of Table Read will begin an electrifying whirlwind 4-episode adventure titled Dream World, written by Sunny Pastiglione, about a mysterious planet where fairy tales and nursery rhymes are reimagined and come to life. We'll join Cassidy Cartwright, an ordinary man, as he embarks on an extraordinary mission into the fantastical realm of Dreamworld, teaming up with a motley crew of fairy tale icons, including the swashbuckling Jack, the pistol-packing giant, and the werewolf Scarlet Hood, in order to save his family trapped back on Earth. Buckle up for a rollercoaster ride complete with jaw-dropping twists, hairpin turns, and, of course, a sprinkle of fairy tale magic. Episode 1. Exterior, upscale Boston home, night. A rainstorm pours down as we establish. Interior, children's room, night. A room divided by a picture window that sleeps boy and girl siblings. Tessa and Reuben, aged 10 and 8, respectively, stand in their pajamas, timidly watching the rain pour down outside as they play on their iPads.
Still raining. Do you think she'll go?
No way. She hates driving in the rain.
You're right, I do.
The children turn to see their mother, Maria Cartwright, 35, and father Cassidy, 35, entering. Maria, a schoolteacher, exudes natural beauty, while Cassidy is a mix of brains, cleverness, and Midwestern charm.
But I have to tonight. I just came to say goodbye, you little munchkins.
Do you really have to go, Mom?
Yeah, it's seriously pouring out.
Listen to your daughter, Mom.
Guys, Grandma Pat isn't feeling well.
Does she have a sore throat?
Yep, and a fever, so she needs my help until she feels better. I'll tell you what, Daddy's gonna read you a bedtime story tonight. And by the time he's finished, if he reads slowly, I'll be at Grandma's house and call you before you go to sleep. Deal?
Deal.
Tessa?
Deal.
Daddy?
Yeah, deal.
Maria kisses each child, then moves to Cassidy.
Drive safe. Love you.
Love you too.
Maria leaves. Cassidy looks over the children.
Okay, now that Mom's gone, there's a new regime around here. I want...
teeth brush
and faces washed, both under covers in 5 minutes.
What are you gonna do while we're getting ready for bed?
I'll pick a book. Now go. I'm timing you. One Mississippi, two Mississippi.
As the kids race toward the bathroom. Interior, Tessa and Ruben's room. 10 minutes later. Tessa and Reuben are tucked under the covers together on Reuben's bed. Cassidy sits behind and cracks open a classically bound blue book, ready to read the kids a bedtime story.
Are you guys sure you don't want to read something more realistic, like a cool history book, like the American Revolution?
Nope. Fairy tales only.
It's your choice.
Dad, do you think Mom will be okay?
Of course. I promise. A little rain never hurt anybody. It's just water. Anyway, without further ado, a favorite among our audience, the tale of King Midas.
Yay!
Yay! Once upon a time, there lived a great and wealthy king named Midas. All that King Midas loved, all that he wanted, was nothing less than riches and gold. Now, Midas had one daughter, Marigold.
As Cassidy reads the Midas story aloud, his voice fades out, and another man's voice fades up. This one is older, wiser, omniscient. This new voice is the voice of Father Time.
Have you ever wondered where fairy tales originally came from? The minds of Earth-born people, perhaps? If that's what you wish to believe.
Exterior, space. We see the Earth amid the infiniteness of space.
Our brother, the Earth. That is your world.
The camera pans right to find a small green planet, a tenth of the size of Earth, and surrounded by red vapors, materialized directly next to Earth.
This is our world. It is a place of dreams and wonders.
Exterior, green planet, day. This green planet is beautiful, with rolling hills, majestic pastures, and a glass barrier. Actually, hundreds of glass barriers reaching as high as the sky, dividing the many different lands of this planet.
Our world is a place where fairy tales and nursery rhymes not only exist, but live out their stories every day. Our world is Dream World. Welcome.
The camera rushes to Jack and the Beanstalk. Jack, in peasant clothes, tosses magic beans into a hole in the ground. After a beat, a giant beanstalk grows, reaching to a large cloud formation.
All your old friends are here. Jack and the Beanstalk.
The camera keeps moving to Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Snow White walks through the forest with the Seven Dwarfs.
Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs?
The camera keeps moving to Little Red Riding Hood. Red Riding Hood knocks on her grandmother's house. The wolf, dressed like her grandmother, answers the door.
Little Red Riding Hood.
The camera rises out of Little Red Riding Hood to an angle in the sky, looking down on the vastness of Dreamworld. We see all the fairy tale and nursery rhymes of Dreamworld nestled in their individual glass barriers.
All existing in their own kingdom within Dreamworld, living out their fairy tales in a daily cycle.
Interior, Midas's bedroom before sunrise. A king's chamber. Midas is in bed fast asleep.
For example, on each Dreamworld day of King Midas's fairy tale, King Midas will always wake up at the sun's first light.
Sunlight hits Midas's face. He stirs, smiles, and opens his eyes to the new day.
Alas, another beautiful day. I must look upon my gold.
The door swings open and a 10-year-old girl runs in. This is Marigold, Midas's daughter.
Good morning, Father. It is an exquisitely beautiful day.
We now see a montage of the Midas fairy tale. Midas meets the fairy. Midas turns an apple and a flower into gold. Midas turns Marigold into a gold statue. Midas dips Marigold's body into the river, and she returns to normal.
Once awake, Midas continues through the natural course of his story.
Interior, Midas garden, night. Midas and Marigold face each other.
Until its end, when he learns his lesson in greed. I hate gold, the very sight of it. I shall never be greedy again.
You've learned your lesson, Father, and I'm thankful you've returned to me.
And we've had a full day, little one. And now it's time for sleep. Have good dreams, and I'll see you in the morrow.
Interior, Midas' bedroom, later that night. Now in his pajamas, Midas lays back in his royal bed and goes to sleep.
And that is the daily cycle of Midas's fairy tale, and it is never changing. Or at least, it was never supposed to change.
Exterior, Massachusetts Turnpike, night, our world. Rain pours down. The roads are nearly flooded. A lone Toyota 4Runner SUV cautiously navigates. Interior, Toyota 4Runner, night. Maria's talking into her Bluetooth as she drives.
Stop worrying, Mom. I'll be there in a little while. Exit 44. Tessa has soccer in the morning, and Ruben's going to a birthday party. No, they're okay. Cassidy's reading to them. Did you take your medicine? Yeah, I better go. I have to concentrate on the road. It's really starting to come down.
Maria hangs up uneasy. Road visibility is getting worse. Interior, Tessa and Ruben's room, night. Cassidy, Tessa, and Ruben continue to read King Midas.
Midas placed all of his now golden possessions in the honest stream that would return all his gold possessions to their proper state. With Marigold freed from the spell, Midas's heart was whole again. Father and daughter danced in celebration to...
Cassidy stops reading as he hears the buzz of his cell. Caller ID flashes Maria. He answers.
So that was quick.
This is Officer Craig of the Boston Highway Patrol. Is this Mr. Cartwright?
Yes?
Is your wife Maria Cartwright?
Cassidy has a sinking feeling in the pit of his stomach.
Yes.
Exterior, New England Thruway, continuous. Maria Cartwright's 4Runner, which is wrapped around a tree. An ambulance and two police cars are settled around. Officer Craig, late 50s, is on a cell phone holding Maria's wallet.
There's been an accident, sir.
In the background, medics zip up Maria's body bag. Interior hallway continuous.
Oh, God, no.
Cassidy drops the Midas book. As the book slams on the floor, we cut to interior Midas bedroom, middle of the night. A loud, thunderous thump echoes, causing Midas to pop up from his sleep. He looks around the room. The night is strange to him. He's never been awake at this time before. Interior hallway, middle of the night. Midas exits his bedroom as Marigold exits hers.
Father, I had the most awful dream.
Aye, as did I, little one. Get dressed. We shall take a ride.
At this time of night? Where will we go?
Anywhere we want.
Exterior, green pasture clearing, middle of the night. Midas and Marigold now ride on horseback, galloping across a great plain, a shallow river, and then to a forest.
Where are we?
I do not know. I have never been this far from the castle before.
The horses halt at the forest's entrance, refusing to move forward. They sense danger.
What is it? There's nothing to fear.
The horse whinny furiously. Midas dismounts and walks toward the forest. After three steps, Midas bumps into an invisible glass barrier. Midas presses his hand against the barrier and sees that it extends as high as the sky and as far as his eye can see.
What is it? Magic?
No. Glass.
Midas finds a rock and smashes away at the glass. It shatters, creating a giant hole. Midas steps through the hole as Marigold and the horses follow into the giant valley of Camelot. In the valley's heart rests a magnificent-looking kingdom centered around a castle of amazing proportions.
One more time for Zeke.
Sorry.
Zeke, no smoking in the room, buddy. That's the only time there's no smoking.
In the valley's heart rests a magnificent-looking kingdom centered around a castle of amazing proportions.
It's beautiful, much grander than our own.
I don't understand. Where are we? It's night in our kingdom, but here, on this side of the glass, it's daytime.
Let's see more.
As Marigold gallops away.
Marigold, wait!
He's too late. She's gone. Midas follows after her. Interior forest, day. Midas catches up to Marigold, who is now off her horse investigating something strange. A sword embedded in stone. It's the fabled sword and the stone for the legend of King Arthur.
A sword stuck in a stone? Peculiar.
Most peculiar.
Two men now approach on horseback.
Someone approaches! Hide!
Midas and Marigold lead their horses into a thicket of bushes as the two men approach. One of the men is King Arthur, 16, and the other is Merlin, 30s, the great magician. The two dismount their horses and walk toward the legendary sword Excalibur, which is jammed into the sacred stone.
What is my purpose here, Master? I'm not of royal blood.
Yes, you, Arthur, are the son of King Uther of Pendragon, and are of royal blood. Now raise up the sword from the stone and claim your birthright. Become King Arthur, King of Camelot.
Angle on Midas and Marigold as they watch.
Lift the sword from the stone and become king? How easy it would be to become king of this Camelot.
But you already are king.
You said it yourself. Camelot is a much larger kingdom than our own. Why have one when we could have two? More lands, more riches, more gold.
More gold? Oh, Father, you have come so far and still learned nothing.
What I do for you. You will one day be an adult, and my wish is for you to never want for anything.
My wants would still be simple.
Aye, but mine are grand.
Resume scene on Arthur and Merlin. Merlin is uneasy.
I sense something strange.
Perhaps it is the winds of change.
No, Arthur, we're being watched.
Midas jumps out from the bushes. Marigold follows behind him.
Who art thou? Name yourself.
I am Midas, soon to be king of Camelot.
And it's out.
And I have hemorrhoids now.
Midas grabs Excalibur's handle and begins tugging at Excalibur, but it won't budge from the stone.
Only one man can lift the sword, Midas, and it's not you.
Arthur runs over and places his hands over Midas's. The two tug on the sword as they jockey for position.
Let go, good sir!
Father, stop this! Let's go home!
After a moment, Midas and Arthur together manage to unsheath the weapon. As they struggle for the sword, Marigold runs over.
Please, Father, stop!
Midas yanks the sword away from Arthur. The momentum of the move swings the sword's tip behind Midas.
Oh, my God.
Midas turns around to find his daughter Marigold impaled in the chest with Excalibur. She falls to the ground, bleeding.
Father.
Marigold, no!
Midas, devastated, holds Marigold's hand as the unthinkable happens. She dies.
You've killed her.
I didn't mean to.
Suddenly, dark clouds roll in. The wind blows furiously. A wild storm is rising.
Merlin, what's happening?
The wild storm reaches full rage. High winds, torrential rains, and lightning.
My daughter is dead. What have I done? What have I done?
Suddenly, the glass barriers around Camelot begin to smash, shatter, and fall down. Once the barriers have all been destroyed, the wild storm spreads rapidly to the other surrounding fairy tales as those barriers, too, begin to smash, shatter, and fall. We leave Midas in the eye of the storm clutching Marigold's body. Exterior space. A white gaseous energy known as the Light of the White Whisper emerges from Dreamworld toward Earth. As it engulfs Earth, the Light of the White Whisper acts as a conduit, draining all of the color from Earth's surface and transferring it all to Dreamworld. The Earth slowly turns into stone with little shimmering specks of gold as Dreamworld reforms itself in Earth's image. Interior hallway, Cassidy's house, same time, our world. Cassidy, sitting against the wall, teary-eyed, still holding his phone in shock.
Dad, come on, we're waiting.
This snaps Cassidy to consciousness. He gathers himself, then enters Tessa and Reuben's room, about to read them another book. Cassidy is clearly upset.
Was that Mom?
Cassidy considers his answer and lies to Tessa.
No, it wasn't your mother.
Are you okay, Dad?
Yeah, why?
You're crying.
Kids, I need to tell you something.
No, another story first. Mom hasn't called yet.
It's only fair. Come on, read Snow White, just till she calls.
Okay. One more. I'll read Snow White.
Read it like Mom does, with the voices.
Cassidy nods, his heart breaking. Reuben slowly walks over to Tessa's bed and slips under the covers.
Okay. Here we go with Snow White.
Interior Dreamworld. Snow White's forest continuous. The wild storm is still blowing through the forest. The Snow Queen pushes on through the heavy winds, holding her baby daughter, Snow White.
Once upon a time, in a beautiful land of green meadows and rolling pastures, lived a noble queen who wished for a daughter as white as snow, as red as blood, and as black as ebony. She was granted her wish, and Snow White was born.
Dad?
Yes, Reuben.
What's that?
What's what?
The bright light coming from outside.
Interior Tessa and Reuben's room continues. The light of the White Whisper illuminates the night sky.
Quick, behind the bed, hurry!
The children jump behind Tessa's bed. Cassidy puts the Snow White book down and moves to the picture window. We go close on the Snow White book as the pages turn by themselves to the part of Snow White where Prince Charming searches the forest for the sleeping Snow White. The pictures of the book reflect the current wild storm occurring in Dreamworld. we switch into Cassidy's POV. The light of the White Whisper forces the window wide open and pours into the room in a gaseous form. Numerous white flashes now occur as the children scream for dear life. Cassidy runs towards his kids behind the bed, but a man, we will come to know as Father Time, materializes next to Cassidy. The white flashes reach a crescendo, then silence.
Rise up, Cassidy Cartwright. Both of our worlds need you.
Who are you?
We find Cassidy standing in the center of a protective shield provided by Father Time, a lanky, brown-robed, eons-old man.
I am the one who knows all. I am Father Time.
What happened to my children?
Find Tessa and Ruben.
There was something, the way you delivered that just made me laugh, and I apologize. Can we get that one
more
time?
Was my trauma funny to you, Mark?
I'm sorry.
I am the one who knows all. I am Father Time.
What happened to my children?
Find Tessa and Ruben huddled together, both turned into stone statues. We also see the Snow White book, the pillows, the blankets. The whole room has turned into stone, all with glimmering specks of gold within them.
They are frozen in stone.
I don't understand.
Cassidy reaches for his children, but Father Time stops him.
Reach your hand beyond the shield, and you too will become stone and lifeless, forfeiting the only chance to save them.
What is this?
The death of your world. We must depart. There is much for you to know. Trust my words. Where we go, they could not possibly follow.
The shield sphere materializes through the wall. Exterior, Boston, night. Father Time's shield sphere hovers over Boston, which is now a dead city. Everything is completely stone. After a beat...
It's all stone?
The entire earth. The effect of what is called the light of the White Whisper. The earth is frozen in time. And the only one who can restore it is you.
Me? Why me? This is crazy.
It would appear our fates are connected through death.
Cassidy considers his wedding ring.
Through pain. Through hope. Hope that even though you lost her, you can still save them. After all, what else is hope if not the main ingredient of a fairy tale?
A fairy tale?
The shield sphere disappears. Interior, dream world, Snow White's forest, night. The aftermath of the wild storm. Fallen trees, overturned stones, leaves everywhere, etc. A disheveled Prince Charming searches for Snow White. The night is dark, it's cold, and most importantly, everything scares him.
Snow White! Snow White, where are you?
He notices Snow White trapped under a fallen branch.
Oh no! Snow White!
Prince Charming tosses the branch aside and tries to revive her. As he does this, Prince Charming notices multiple pairs of dark red eyes watching him from the bushes.
Please, Snow White, please wake up. I need you.
He gives her a gentle kiss on the lips. She stirs.
My friends, what happened?
A wild storm rose. The forest is destroyed.
I feel so cold. Kiss me.
Make this nightmare go away.
One second, Snow White. A little less. Sassy?
Less sassy, got it.
I feel so cold. Kiss me.
Make this nightmare go away.
Prince Charming pecks Snow White on the lips again, then timidly pulls away.
Come now, we must find shelter.
Another kiss, please.
Prince Charming delivers another light peck on the lips to Snow White. Only this time, Snow White slips him the tongue. When the two stop kissing...
Not bad. I'm sorry. Who are you again?
Snow White pops up now, levitating a foot off the ground, close on Prince Charming as the mysterious bright white flash strobes over his face.
I don't know.
Sucks for you, buddy.
Find the red eyes from the bushes now stepping into the light. Although we only see six of them, they are gropey, sleazy, greedy, creepy, meany, and dumpy, are known as the Seven. The seven dwarf-sized demon creatures with mini dragon wings and razor-sharp claws.
What are you looking at, chump? We're with her.
Such horrible-looking creatures.
Prince Charming turns to run away, but bumps into demon number Seven, unhappy.
It always starts with name-calling, huh? Hi, I'm unhappy.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Unhappy punches Prince Charming in the face.
Can't you tell?
The Seven jump Prince Charming, roughly bringing him to his feet and spreading his arms eagle.
Wait! Unhand me!
Unhappy covers Prince Charming's mouth.
What do you things think you're doing?
This guy's an A1 stiff. Just getting him ready for the big mowdown. Ain't that what you want, boss?
Me? Boss?
Yeah, wait, demon, you boss. My name's Meanie.
And I'm Creepy. People say we look alike, but I don't see it.
They do. In fact, all the demons look exactly the same.
Hey, boss. Remember me? Sleazy. That's greedy, gropey, and...
Dumpy. Sup?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You're the Seven. You're my pets?
Pets is a tad reductive, boss. More like friends with killing benefits.
I'm sorry, I haven't been myself lately.
Us too. Seems to be going around.
Anyway, this guy was trying to put the moves on ya, and that's a no-no. So now it's time to step up to the plate. You don't owe him nothing.
Sleazy's right. Killing's gotta be done here, and you're the only one who can do it.
Buck steps with you, boss.
That's right. I am the boss.
Snow White extends her right arm and aims it at Prince Charming, as if it were a weapon.
Looks like she gathered her druthers. Translation, you're toast.
Unhappy lets go of Prince Charming's mouth and flies off.
Please, what are you doing?
Isn't it obvious?
Snow White blasts Prince Charming in the chest with a red energy bolt, killing him. The Seven cheers, his body falls to the ground. Snow White pouts.
Why so glum, chum?
Ugh, I feel dreadful.
Snow White waves her hand, and a full-length mirror appears. Meanie runs to the mirror and admires his ass.
Say, do these pants make me look fat?
Snow White kicks Meanie aside and begins to assess her own appearance.
Oh, I feel dreadful because I look dreadful. I can't see my father like this.
Snow White's hands become aglow with magic that shrouds her body in a cocoon. After a beat, the cocoon dissipates, and Snow White's dainty Sunday's best is changed into a white leather miniskirt with thigh-high white boots.
Hubba hubba!
Oh, hell!
Snow White sticks her hand out and creates a mini ice sculpture of her new look self. Note, from this point forward, Snow White will be referred to as Ice Princess.
The Ice Princess. Mirror, mirror, hanging free. Is there anyone in Dreamworld as hot as me?
Nothing is heard from the mirror.
I hate to break it to you, boss, but mirrors don't talk.
Ice Princess waves a hand, and the mirror disappears.
A girl can dream, can't she?
Ice Princess and the Seven leave as the camera pans up to their intended destination, a city in the distance with Earth-like characteristics, skyscrapers, bright lights, etc. Exterior, city side street, night. Skyscrapers on either side. We're in a deserted alley that leads to an otherwise unassuming intersection. A magic teleportation sphere appears, containing Father Time and Cassidy.
We're back on Earth?
No, your Earth was left frozen in stone, drained of all life. Time flows freely here. The fairy tales are no longer bound to the daily cycle. Our two worlds have combined.
What the hell are you talking about? Where are we?
We're in Dreamworld.
Where?
Dreamworld. The world of living fairy tales. The world where fairy tales and nursery rhymes you knew as an Earth child existed and lived out their stories.
Living fairy tales? Is this a joke? Fairy tales aren't real.
Fairy tales are real, I'm afraid. More real than you could imagine.
When you say fairy tales, you mean like Jack and the Beanstalk? Like Little Red Riding Hood?
Nursery rhymes such as Three Men in a Tub and Starlight, Starbright, they're all true. You see, the real dream world was divided by barriers, allowing each fairy tale to exist independently from one another. But a tragedy occurred in one of the fairy tales, which ruptured the balance and caused the barriers to come down, combining all the fairy tales and nursery rhymes into one.
Sending that, the light thing...
Light of the White Whisper.
Whatever, to Earth.
Father Time disappears, then reappears. He seems to be fading out of existence, that is.
What's happening to you?
It's as I feared. In being Father Time, I am caretaker of both worlds, but now that your world doesn't exist, I will no longer exist. Leaving you, Cassidy Cartwright, the sole survivor of both our worlds.
You said I could change things back, that I could fix it. How?
Go back in time. Stop this.
Father Time disappears.
Go back in time? Go back in time where? Who did this? Where do I start? Oh, this is just great.
Riding a soft wind toward Cassidy glides a piece of paper. Unseen by Cassidy, but seen by us, is Father Time's ghost guiding the paper along. As Cassidy grabs the paper, Father Time's ghost then disappears. Cassidy reads the paper, which is actually a wanted poster. It reads, "Wanted, the Redeemers for crimes against the Sleeper. Responsible for robbing 20 banks in the city." Underneath the text is a picture of five strangely costumed outlaws, their faces unidentifiable.
The Redeemers?
At that moment, monstrous yelling is heard from the street.
What's going on?
Exterior, the Sleeper's Square, continuous. Cassidy enters to find Dreamworld's equivalent of New York's Times Square. The buildings are combinations of Earth office buildings with medieval castles, treehouses, and mushrooms. Standing above all buildings is the Sleeper's Fortress, a giant stone castle resting comfortably on top of a weird version of the Empire State Building. On the street, it's chaos as we join a food riot in progress. Thousands of medieval fairy tale peasants are being attacked by large, gruesome ogres armed with whips. One ogre whips Cassidy, forcing him out of the shadows and into the street among the terrified peasants.
Out of the shadows, bumpkin! The Ice Princess wants all the streets surrounding the Sleeper's Fortress cleared. The night's work is about to begin.
A rumble in the distance. The peasants are overcome with fear. Cassidy turns to peasant number one.
What's that?
They're called soldiers of the force.
Cassidy turns to see 100 men on horseback, known as soldiers of the Fourth, thunder onto the street, trampling every peasant in their path. The soldiers are fully armored up, carrying 44 caliber guns and big metal shields.
Clear the streets at once!
The soldiers shoot indiscriminately into the crowd, killing a number of them. Cassidy heads toward the side street from where he originally came. Bodies fall all around him. Exterior side street continues. Horrified, Cassidy runs down the alley away. Shouldn't it be Cassidy runs away down the alley?
Sure, you can write it that way.
Okay.
Do you want to be grammatical? Do you want to speak English?
Horrified.
Author's permission.
You got it.
Horrified, Cassidy runs away down the alley. Dissolve to a montage of scenes. Scene one is Cassidy showing the wanted poster of the Redeemers to a number of peasants who shy away from him. Scene two is Cassidy huddled by a small fire, looking at a photograph of Tessa and Reuben. Scene three is Cassidy at Frederick's bank, which is built into a giant mushroom. A gaping hole is blown in the bank's wall, telling us a robbery has occurred recently. Cassidy pulls a ledger from his pocket and makes a mark on one of its pages. He's recording which banks have been robbed. We end the montage, and it's now 2 months later at Exterior Palewater National Bank, Street, Day. The Palewater National Bank of Dreamworld is built into a redwood tree. A cloaked and hooded man stops to admire the bank, lowering his hood. It's a scruffy, unshaven Cassidy. Cassidy consults his ledger, revealing a map with circled banks, half of which are marked with red X's for those already robbed by the Redeemers. Frederick's bank is crossed off, but the Palewater National Bank is not. Cassidy enters Palewater. Interior Palewater National Bank, Day. It's similar to an earth bank. Window tellers, a waiting area, etc. Cassidy takes a seat in the waiting area. He looks to an hourglass wall clock whose flowing sands and the top section indicate the bank has just opened. We'll now dissolve to the end of day. The hourglass clock is now almost emptied, and the bank is about to close. The last bank patrons waiting for a teller are a few peasant folk and a circus clown and a grey-hooded stranger. With no sign of the Redeemers, Cassidy calls it a day. As Cassidy reaches the exit, he bumps into the Mastodon, an 8-foot giant of a man who's built like a tank with a deep voice.
In or out, pal?
Mastodon's presence piques Cassidy's curiosity.
In?
Your funeral.
Mastodon shoves Cassidy to the ground. A black wolf hoofs it in behind Mastodon, who immediately slams the bank door shut. Bank patron clown is frightened.
A black wolf? That's a black wolf! It came in with the Mastodon! That can only mean...
The gray-hooded stranger lowers her hood.
The Redeemers are in the house.
This is Scarlet Hood, mid-20s, a sexy redhead. Scarlet flips high in the air and lands on top of the teller's window, aiming a crossbow at the clown.
Give that clown a prize. Now hit the floor. Wolf, find me the bank president.
The bank patrons all jump to the floor as Wolf snatches up the 5-inch-tall Thomas Thumb, squirming in the corner.
Good work, boy.
Wolf calmly walks the diminutive bank president over to the outstretched hand of Mastodon. Mastodon brings Thumb to eye level.
Don't do anything stupid. We're here for the magic beans. Nobody has to get hurt.
Under which, Mastodon draws a mini Gatling gun, which fits around his right fist.
Mr. Bank President, I am the fabulous Scarlet Hood, and we have come to rob this bank in the name of the Redeemers.
Suddenly, we hear footsteps running across the roof toward a stained glass skylight built into the bank's ceiling. The footsteps stop, and Jack comes crashing through the skylight, conveniently landing right next to Scarlet. Jack, mid-20s, is a thief with an eye patch covering his right eye.
Ah,
Is there a better man than I?
Here he goes again.
Nice entrance, Jack. I'm swooning, but you've already got the girl.
And I'll never stop trying to impress her with feats of amazement.
Sorry to bother your self-aggrandizing, Jack, but can we get back to the robbery, please?
You got it, Daddy-O. All right, you heard my extremely large partner. Let us commence with the robbery. Translation, we want your magic beans. All of them.
Angle on the bank teller's booth as Scarlet and Jack now open each money drawer to reveal magic beans in each compartment where normal bills would be. They fill giant cloth sacks of magic beans. Then Jack leaves a single playing card, the Jack of Hearts, in the empty drawer. The camera finds Cassidy. He cautiously rises to his feet, but Mastodon puts him in his crosshairs.
Stay down. The bank's insured.
I don't care about the money. I need to talk to you.
This isn't an open mic, stranger. Jack, we got ourselves a hero. Permission to lump him up?
What?
Jack cartwheels into the main room and pulls a nickel-plated 9mm on Cassidy.
Well, hello. Are you a hero, stranger?
No, I was brought here by Father Time. I need the Redeemer's help.
Oh, Father Time brought you? Who the hell is Father Time? And more importantly, who the hell are you?
My name is Cassidy. I've been trying to find you for the past 3 months. I need...
Oh, wait! You're some kind of groupie?
Ugh, I hate groupies.
Me? A groupie? No!
Through the smashed hole in the skylight, Mastodon sees a number of shadows circling above the bank.
Sorry, stranger. That's all the time we have. Lost Boys incoming, Jack. Time to roll.
Scarlet, bar's closed.
Just getting my purse.
Scarlet passes the magic bean-filled sacks over to Mastodon, who smashes a hole in the sidewall, creating an exit.
Please, take me with you!
Cassidy takes a step forward, prompting Jack to fire his gun. Jack's gun shoots out a metal-tipped arrowhead connected to a steel cable, which wraps around Cassidy's legs, tripping him.
Maybe next time. Our team's already got a cool, mysterious guy. Me.
Don't feel so bad, stranger. Here.
Mastodon then throws Thomas Thumb over to Cassidy.
Yeah! Have a souvenir.
Cassidy catches Thumb. By the time he looks up, the Redeemers are gone. After a beat, six of the Lost Boys, or the Lost pirate-looking creatures with feathered angel wings, skin color and clothes, all the same shadowy black tone, enter through the bank's smashed skylight.
What happened here?
The Redeemers cleared me out. They stole all my magic beans. That big jerk over there, his name's Cassidy. He's a sympathizer.
Cassidy untangles his legs and stands up.
You there, are you a Redeemer sympathizer?
What? No, I'm not a sympathizer.
No, he's lying! He wanted to tag along with them.
Thomas Thumb speaks true!
Yeah.
Cassidy dashes out the bank's front door.
After him, full retrieval, before the team leader gets here.
Three of the Lost fly off through the smashed skylight to follow Cassidy. Exterior alley, night. Cassidy runs for his life as the three Lost pursue him from the air.
Claim allegiance to the Ice Princess! Claim allegiance to the sleeper!
Cassidy gets tripped up by a dive-bombing Lost and stumbles to the ground.
Did you actually fall on the ground there?
No, I didn't fall.
He's acting!
Acting!
He's an actor!
Physical performance.
Physical performance.
All three Lost land, unsheath sickles, and walk menacingly towards Cassidy.
Failure to claim loyalty to His Majesty the Sleeper results in ultimate death.
Suddenly, a great howl.
What's that?
Wolf appears, jumping on Lost Number One. Jack emerges from the shadows, sword drawn, and duels with Lost Number Two. Mastodon jumps down from the roof, grabbing Lost Number Three, smashing him into the brick wall. The Redeemers regroup around Cassidy after defeating all three Lost.
You should be more careful, stranger. Picking a fight with the Lost isn't the smartest thing you could do.
Why'd you come back?
It doesn't matter why. All that matters is we did, even when our own escape was clear.
We heard your refusal to swear allegiance to the Sleeper and the Ice Princess. Figured you might be an ally and not a groupie.
Wolf barks intensely. The Redeemers look to the sky.
Oh, crap. It's Simon.
Simple Simon, 30s, French, long blonde hair and a ponytail, soars on high. As Simon lands in front of them...
The word around town was that you were all set to hit Golden Apple Bank tonight.
Oh, funny. I heard the same thing.
Jack raises his sword, challenging Simon.
No, not today, Jack. Simon says, fraise.
Who says what?
What did he say?
What the hell did you say?
Everyone loses the game.
Pepe Le Pew there?
Not today, Jack. Simon says freeze.
Jack, Scarlet, Cassidy, and Mastodon are frozen in place. Wolf growls at Simon. Simon draws his sword.
The only drawback to an otherwise perfect game. I can't play with animals.
Scarlet looks to Wolf and passes along silent instructions. Wolf escapes down the alley.
By the time he comes back with help, it will be too late. The Ice Princess is going to love this. Simple Simon cashes Jacques and the Redeemers. Maybe I'll get a promotion. Either way, my life is taking a turn for the better. Sorry, can't say the same for you.
Under which Scarlet's eyes have rolled back into her head, and she's begun a low hum.
Hey, Scarlet. Is that you, Amy? Knock it off. Simon says, stop! Simon says, stop! Stop! Why are you not stepping?
Scarlet's features take on wolf-like characteristics, a pointy nose, long ears, and claws. She is now transformed into a werewolf, and Simon's spell over her is broken.
That is not fair! Simon says, kill Scarlet!
Jack, Mastodon, and Cassidy move towards Scarlet. Scarlet charges Simon, but Simon takes off to a 10-foot hover.
Perhaps another time, my dear. Had I known you were such an animal, I might have claimed you for myself.
Wolf suddenly jumps Simon, knocking him down in front of Scarlet. In a swift motion, Scarlet severs Simon's head with a... Sorry.
So violent he can't
get. Violent line, too. I'm verklempt.
In a swift motion, Scarlet severs Simon's head with a claw swipe. Her growls intensify with uncontrollable rage. Jack approaches, locking eyes with her and gently soothing her with a pet.
Shh, it's me, Scarlet. It's Jack. I'm here with you now. Shh, it's time for you to come back to me. Come back, love.
Scarlet's bloodlust wanes, and she begins to transform back to human form.
That's it, love. Come back.
Scarlet's completely human now, but fast asleep. Mastodon throws her body over his left shoulder. The magic bean sacks go over his right.
Let's go, Jack, before this place is crawling with lost.
Jack, Mastodon, and Wolf start to walk off without Cassidy.
What about me? I need your help. I wasn't lying about that.
A lot of people need our help. What makes you so special?
I need to go back in time.
Oh, that's all? Why didn't you just say that earlier? Jack, do I need to say this? This guy is a couple of pineapples short of a fruit salad.
That may be, but we can't leave him here alone. He's wanted now, like us. Come on, stranger, let's go.
Cassidy, my name's Cassidy.
Says you, Daddy-O, but stranger sounds so much cooler. Well,
where are we going, Jack?
Where else? Camelot.
Exterior, the sleeper's fortress, night. To establish. Interior, throne room, night. In a grand throne room, two regal chairs stand side by side, one elevated above the other. The Ice Princess sits in the lower seat, while the higher one remains mysteriously empty. The seven demons lie at the Ice Princess's feet. Approaching Ice Princess nervously is Tweedledee, a thin, wormy, blonde-haired man in his 20s, wearing a colorful Shakespearean suit.
Rumors, Tweedledee, circulate the court that our trap set at Golden Apple was left unsprung. Is there any truth to this?
Rumors of Jack robbing Golden Apple can no doubt be traced to the man himself, spread to our ears with the help of Redeemer sympathizers. Yes, regrettably, while our eggs were in the Golden Apple basket, Jack and the Redeemers plundered Pale Water instead.
Fourth bank in as many weeks, and presumably the biggest heist yet.
Magistrate Simon and a lost patrol were dispatched to the scene and killed in the ensuing battle.
It's only a matter of time before the Redeemer's resisting grows into a full-scale rebellion. Ugh. Any day now, my father will awaken from the dark sleep.
Our spies have found out the Redeemer's base, Camelot, is hidden somewhere in the Sleeper's City. Perhaps right under our very noses.
Redeemers kill my police. Our citizens support them. How do we catch these thieves?
Boss, I got a great idea.
I'll decide if it's great, Meanie. Speak.
What about the Beast? If anyone can root out Jack and his team of simps, it's the Beast.
No. We can't trust the Beast. Are you mad?
Yeah. Sorry. Just trying to be helpful.
Tweedledee, what do you advise?
What do I advise? Oh, what do I advise? I think we should.
Sorry.
Tweedledee spins like a top to a chorus of I think we shoulds, then abruptly stops, and his face transforms, appearing younger with brown hair. He's now Tweedledum. Gone is his Shakespearean accent.
Ugh, Tweedledum, what do you advise?
I think we need a military solution.
Demon Meanie makes a scared face.
That creeps me out every time.
Tweedledum whisks open the double doors of the throne room.
Allow us to introduce General Peter Pan.
Entering on horseback is General Peter Pan, late 20s. As he approaches the throne, Demon Meanie stands at attention.
Ten-hut!
All seven demons salute General Pan as he salutes back, raising a golden hook with many spikes instead of a hand.
Ice Princess.
As you may have heard, I have a proverbial thorn in my side. The Redeemers are continuing to cause disharmony in Dreamworld, and the constant in all this is someone you know very well.
That foolish boy, Jack.
Zooming into the room at a high speed is Dragonfly, a 2-inch woman with fly wings and insect antennas protruding from her head. Dragonfly discharges a trail of fire as she zooms around the room.
You know my associate, Dragonfly.
Dragonfly lands on General Pan's left shoulder and shoots a fireball from her mouth.
A pleasure. Now, General Pan, time is of the essence. The sleeper will rise soon from the dark sleep.
And Jack needs to be found. Find Jack, we find the Redeemers.
Find the Redeemers, we find Camelot.
Find Camelot, and we find Mother, and end the resistance once and for all.
End episode 1.